While artificial intelligence has been around for quite some time, for instance, in predictive text in your mobile phone, it's only been recently that we've seen an explosion in interest in the subject. And not just interest, but fear, as even tech influencers throw around apocalyptic predictions. Even Elon Musk warned recently that AI could lead to, quote, civilization destruction, end of quote. And lately, we're seeing fake photos and videos so skillfully rendered, it's hard to tell what's real anymore. Meanwhile, AI is changing our personal lives every day, from the ability to create instant AI art projects to medical applications that allow us quicker and more accurate diagnoses. It's clear that the advent of artificial intelligence for the masses is creating a future that we may not have anticipated and may not know how to handle. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. It feels like the discussion of artificial intelligence has exploded over just the past few months. People who had never thought seriously about it before are using images and writing created by a computer. But what's it all about? Let's bring in Chris Mattman. He's an author and an international expert in AI and machine learning. And Chris, thanks for being with us. Welcome.
Hal, thanks for having me. Really appreciate being on the program today.
All right. Well, first of all, let's find out what the heck is AI. Tell us what you think it is, how you define it.
Yeah. So AI, or artificial intelligence, Hal, is sort of the process of looking at the real world and doing what we do as humans. So looking at a bunch of DVDs and then sorting them, or Blu-ray discs and sorting them by genre, or, you know, sorting them by who directed them. So we call that unsupervised learning or clustering. AI is also looking at data and trying to label it. Like some of these images that are running right now, or looking at that image and noticing there's a hand on a keyboard there and things like that. So it's looking at data and labeling that. We call that classification. And then finally, AI is looking at all of the data and trying to figure out patterns that are in it that we can derive across way more data than humans could actually look at. And the AI doesn't get tired, and humans do.
Yeah, we do, but they don't. And I guess my question is, why do you think there's been such a sudden explosion in all this interest about AI?
In particular, Hal, you know, the biggest reason is there was a product that arrived sort of in the fall, winter quarter of last year called ChatGPT. And what ChatGPT actually allows is to generate very believable, almost unmistakably human text. It can generate scripts for movies. It can fill the content on your website for your manufacturing company. It can help to generate and write your children's book reports. And it can do so in such a way through this ChatGPT program, which has been trained ultimately on most of the data on the internet. It could do so in a way also that pulls in other data that the company that made ChatGPT, OpenAI, actually purchased. It could be your health records. It could be data that's available related to your internet browsing and all sorts of other things. And given that capability, Hal, and the ability to generate that text, that really has people in a frenzy right now.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about things that are scary, you know, sometimes when you hear the experts say that there's fear over this, you do pay attention. What is your level of concern about AI?
You know, I have a couple levels of concern. How when we train what we call AI models, which are the things that classify, that cluster or sort, and that predict things, when we train those, we give it data. And if we don't tell the AI models where the bias is in that data, we'll have situations like we had in the early versions of smart cars from Tesla, where they had never seen someone in a wheelchair before, or they didn't see enough people of color. And you want those cars to stop when they see, you know, the people of color in a wheelchair. We don't want the data that it's trained on not to be representative of the people. So training data bias is one. Another, Hal, is in the area of prediction. When the AI makes predictions, or when it clusters things, sorts them, or when it tells us what the value is expected to be, we want to know its confidence in the prediction. We don't want to know whether it's just going to rain tomorrow, yes or no. We want to know that there was only a 15% confidence that it was going to rain tomorrow. And to be honest, that was the highest confidence that it had. 15% isn't that great, but it should report the confidence associated with that. And finally, Hal, the thing I would say is we don't want the AI to come in and replace all the humans. And no one's saying that it's going to do that, but that's some of the fear mongering. It's not going to happen, but we also need to provide what we call upskilling, job transition facilities to humans that the AI helps automate portions of the jobs. And upskilling allows those humans and people to still and to work with the AI in concert and to still be very effective and to have very meaningful, well-paying, good-wage jobs. So upskilling, bias in the training data, and confidence in the predictions.
Yeah, we don't want to be doing any fear-mongering here at all, but there is that sort of what I like to think of as the good, the bad, and the ugly of anything. And so to you, short answer, what's the biggest benefit of AI?
Really, Hal, the biggest benefit that it has today is the potential to automate very repetitive tasks and to really reduce the amount of labor, headcount, resources, time, and money to achieve very important things.
All right, so that would be the good. Yeah. What would be the bad?
The bad would be to do that in a way that isn't human. That doesn't take into account the things that I talked about, you know, upskilling, making sure that people have meaning in their lives. And the bad could potentially be allowing too much of it to spread without governance and control.
And what would be the ugly?
You know, the ugly could be like we're seeing in campaign ads. You know, immediately Biden announces his campaign, he's running, and, you know, the opposition Republicans put out an ad. Or the Trump campaign puts out an ad, and it has tons of artificially intelligent AI-generated images of an apocalyptic future, you know, in which Biden's president in 2024. Like you're showing right now, that is the ugly. The ugly is those images are indiscernible. And flooding social media, the internet, with all of this AI-generated content without knowing that AI is generating it, because let's be honest, those are not discernible from humans. You know, it's hard to tell whether those are real or not. We need stamps on these images. We need attribution. We need to not flood the internet with these things before we understand what's going on.
All right, so we only have about a half a minute here. Just to sort of sum up a quick thought, what's the bottom line for you with AI?
I'm excited, Hal, by the potential of AI. I think it's going to revolutionize many industries. You know, think of a call center. In 24 months, AI could take a phone call, provide someone, you know, a referral to a brown bag food service program, get them help from domestic violence, and do so and look across many, many sources of information that humans aren't able to do. So industries like that, industries, of course, like smart cars, vehicles, cutting down on the amount of time truckers have to drive. I'm excited by the potential of AI. I don't think we should pause like people were talking about. That would not be good for our national security in terms of developing it because our adversaries aren't pausing. And additionally, I think we need to have those guardrails we talked about, Hal, which is bias in the prediction, understanding the bias in the training data, understanding the confidence in the predictions, and then finally making sure there's an upskilling
plan. All right. Chris Mattman, thank you so very much for joining us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, what about the creators, writers, musicians, artists? What happens to them when AI becomes even more widespread? How does anybody ever own their creations anymore? We tackle that right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. One of the concerns over the influx of artificial intelligence into the arts is the fear of creative types that machines will take over their jobs. Indeed, as we've seen, in many cases, art writing and music created by computer AI is hard to distinguish from that created by humans. Joining us right now to talk about all of this is entertainment attorney Jonathan Handel. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You know, AI is changing the landscape for humans in so many different ways. It's natural for us to be, you know, fearing some of this, fearing being replaced by computers. But take a look at this right here. AI is actually offering some miraculous things as well. For example, a new song by the Beatles will be released later this year thanks to artificial intelligence. Filmmaker Peter Jackson was able to take a demo John Lennon had made and use AI to extract John's voice from the cassette tape. Lennon's vocals were then mixed into the new song. Wonderful? Mind-boggling? Jonathan, how can we cope with a future where people who have died are singing and back in the world again?
Well, Hal, it's great to be with you. Thank you. It is a conundrum in many ways because, on the one hand, AI offers new opportunities, such as the one that you just alluded to. On the other hand, there is the fear of replacement. To some extent, that fear in some professions may be overblown. We have to remember that we are in a funding hype cycle here. There are billions of dollars being spent. And so there, you know, there is an incentive to overemphasize. We are rightfully impressed that the dog can dance, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be performing at the New York Ballet next week.
And the notion of the Beatles having a comeback, maybe Elvis would be next. Right. I mean, there's a lot of thoughts there, but what are some of the issues we could run into in the future with artificial intelligence?
Well, there are a set of them. Copyright is one issue. On the one hand, the material that's being used to train these large language models, such as ChatGPT, are copyrighted materials that were accessible on the internet. And copyright law doesn't deal directly with the question of whether it's fair use to learn from this material without a license and without paying a fee. That's an issue that is pending in the courts in the context of creating photographs and visual art using AI. And then the question of whether the resulting product itself can be copyrighted depends on whether there's human intervention or not. Add to that the question of whether labor gets replaced. Now, you know, ever since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, you know, 200 years ago, people have been concerned about being replaced by machinery, first industrial machinery and now post-industrial information technology. So this is not a new issue, but it is an issue that is very accentuated.
But automation, that was another thing that kind of came in and kicked a lot of people out. And this is the same sort of thing that we're talking about here?
Well, it is. And a lot of the reality of automation actually is that things take longer to disseminate than people expect. And the people being kicked out of jobs, a lot of times it's more attrition and retirement rather than literally people being under disemployed because of automation.
Should writers, artists, musicians, should they be worried?
To some extent, yes, and it varies. Okay, the actors, for example, there already is deep fake technology that is available that can create performances. And when you turbocharge that with AI, the concern is that you could, you know, replace an actor. The flip side, the writers who are very concerned, that may be a bit more hype. I mean, I asked ChatGPT to write a gay romance and I almost fell asleep reading it. I mean, there's just no, you know, no soul, no passion to it. And the idea
Not now.
But
would that come?
Right. But the future always seems a little bit closer than, you know, it's the opposite of objects in the mirror, closer than they appear. Objects in the mirror are sometimes further away than they appear. And the idea that we're going to get usable scripts out of AI and we can just ignore the writers, I don't think that that's an imminent problem. But we have to remember, the writers are concerned as well that in the past, technology such as home video, the home video residuals formula, was baked in at a time when the economics were different and never changed. And so the writers are afraid that if they don't get guardrails now, they never will.
And how do we deal with things like the concept of ownership?
Well, the concept of ownership is, you know, relates to copyright and relates to contract law. And it, as I alluded to, those are very difficult issues that are new to the law, frankly.
Well, it sounds like it's filled with legal potholes.
It is filled with legal potholes and legal conundrums. That's right.
Yeah, and so we've got the Writers Guild out there on strike. We have a talk about other unions that are having labor issues right now. This is at the crux of a lot of that, isn't it?
It is. It is. The Directors Guild just did a deal, and they have some protective language relating to AI. SAG-AFTRA, the Actors Union, is in negotiations now, and they have some very specific and emphatic requests regarding AI that, you know, we may end up seeing an actor strike. We may not. I'm guessing we probably will, and that'll be one of the issues.
Well, we only have about a minute left, but just very quickly, as you stretch your imagination and you think to where this stuff could end up going, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think the more formulaic the writing is, so, for example, marketing writing, political fundraising, things like that, the more threatened by AI. The more we want creativity, the more we don't want to squeeze the soul out of entertainment, potentially the less threatened. But
Wait, what about news writing?
You know, certain news writing is formulaic. I mean, you know, sports writing, for example, can be formulaic. Business reports on stock price movements, things like that. But the sort of writing that you do, the sort of writing that I do as a journalist, is deeper and more analytical and is less likely to be threatened.
Entertainment attorney, journalist, Jonathan Handel, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Always good to talk to you. And coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, we'll continue our conversation. One of the biggest advantages from artificial intelligence may be in healthcare. A1 learning, or AI learning rather, can allow faster and more accurate diagnoses. We take a look at that right after the break. We'll be right back. It's fascinating. The use of artificial intelligence in medicine could be life-saving. Not to say that doctors don't do a good job right now. They do. But providing them with tools that make them more efficient could be a real game changer. Joining us right now is Dr. Susie Bash with RadNet. Susie and I have known each other for a long time. We've often talked about this issue of artificial intelligence in medicine. And, you know, you've sort of become the neuroradiologist extraordinaire when it comes to AI. So where does artificial intelligence play a role in medicine right now?
Yeah, so AI is really revolutionizing medicine. And I would say probably most profoundly in technology-based subspecialties like radiology. So we use, I work for RadNet, which is the largest outpatient imaging enterprise in the U.S., and we use a lot of different AI tools. In fact, I've been using AI in my clinical practice for about 18 years now.
But when we think about radiology, we think about MRIs, we think about CAT scans. Now we're thinking about AI.
Right, and we're applying that throughout all levels of imaging, before the patient's image, during image acquisition, and after. And it's really exciting, some of the things that we're seeing.
So how does that work?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different AI tools that we use. But for example, we can use AI to scan that allows us to scan patients 50 to 75% faster when they come in for an MRI.
All right, so speed is one thing.
Speed is huge because it turns out that, you know, 30% of patients have a severe anxiety reaction when they go in the magnet.
Yeah. And so you get in that tube, you feel claustrophobic.
Exactly.
Right?
And so to be able to get them in and out faster is very important. In fact, patients rank that as their number one important element when they're ranking their imaging experience. But we don't just go faster. The AI allows the higher image quality as well. So radiologists love it. And truthfully, when we have very high image quality, that can improve our diagnostic capability.
Yeah, right, so to be clear, MRIs are better than CAT scans, right? Because you get layers and you can see things better. But what does AI do to add to that mix? And does it help the CAT scan look better as well?
We can use AI. In fact, we do use AI for CT. But in terms of speeding up the exam, CTs are already very fast. But MRs are slower. So again, to be able to get them in and out 50 to 75% faster, but with better image quality on MRI, is a huge plus for everyone involved.
Mammograms are more accurate?
Well, mammograms in evaluation of breast cancer, we use AI for cancer detection as well. So that's not so much about a speed because a mammogram is fast. But it's amazing, this technology. We use an AI tool at RadNet that allows, this AI tool will actually pick up breast cancers 1 to 2 years before expert breast radiologists. And obviously, the earlier you can diagnose the cancer, the more successful the treatment will be and the better the chance of survival. So AI is making a tremendous difference in the lives of patients when it comes to cancer recognition. We also have AI tools in development for detecting lung cancer and prostate cancer. And the reason why AI is so good for cancer detection is AI is actually better at pattern recognition than humans. It's also better at faster data processing. But humans, on the other hand, are better at global reasoning. So there's a very synergistic relationship between AI and physicians when it comes to interpreting these exams, but it's making a big difference.
Well, where do you see this stuff going? I mean, obviously, we've been talking through this show about, you know, where it is and where it goes. You're talking about such an advanced situation now with AI. Where can it go?
Right. Well, I personally think that there will not be a single imaging study that's not first evaluated by a computer in the future. One of the big things that we're using AI for in the radiology industry is to detect urgent and critical findings on exams. So the AI is applied before the radiologist ever sees the MRI or CT, and it can detect things like brain bleeds or cervical spine fractures or pulmonary embolism, blood clot in the lungs, abdominal aortic aneurysms, and very importantly, strokes. Turns out that 1,400 hospitals in the United States are using AI when a patient presents to the ER with symptoms and signs of a stroke. And these patients are doing much better because the faster you can get them to treatment, the better their overall neurologic outcome is. In fact, 40% better. Their hospital stay is 2.5 days less, and the time from the minute they hit the ER to the time to treatment is decreased by 87 minutes when you use this AI technology. So it's very, very exciting technology.
Like I said before, I've known you for quite a long time. You sound like you're incredibly enthusiastic about this. I mean, enthusiastically enthusiastic.
I am, really. I am a big believer in AI. But that doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be clinical validation trials to make sure that these products, that the vendors of AI are actually delivering
and
what they claim
to. And perhaps regulation as well.
Absolutely, yes. But, you know, like I said, we've been using it for a long time, for example, in the evaluation of patients with dementia and multiple sclerosis. It's making a big difference there as well. And so there are many different areas in medicine where AI is, you know, transformative. And so I am very excited about that.
All right. Well, I'm excited to have had you here on Fox 11 News in Depth, Dr. Susie Bash. Thanks so much. And Fox 11 News in Depth continues right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the How, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts or just go to whatthehowpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.